Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning. If you're just after joining us, we really do appreciate your company and your support and your listenership and so on and so forth. Busy all morning on the phone lines, as you can imagine. There's bound to be someone in the council who could fill in a form and make an application. There's such a thing as asking for help and working together to get a job done. By the way, this is off the back of the fact that we may have missed out on hundreds of thousands of euro of funding because we weren't able, when I say we, not we, the council weren't able to process applications for a Monuments Preservation Fund. Art and archaeology are not the same thing. A national monument is not the same as a commemorative art piece. As for council CEO to answer why the funding was not applied for. Councillor Barry Sweeney speaking on behalf of the council on that issue today, we're told. There's a building in Carndonagh which was in for an Antas Nua Carndonagh regeneration project. They got about 10 million for it, and that was 5 to 6 years ago. They didn't try to buy the building, but now it's up for compulsory purchase. Why are these projects so slow at moving forward? Noel Blaney going for Europe. I, for one, hopes he never gets in, as he's done nothing, this caller believes, in this county. Never mind the country, people's homes crumbling in front of them, and him saying, go for this scheme, that scheme. What a waste, they say. Donegal may as well be part of the North. Ironically, we'd be better off. We've no voice in Dublin. Anyway, it's fairly obvious from the discussion this morning on being left out of funding once again. Another, what is this world coming to? A set of number plates annoying people. There's no words. And I tried to put that into context a little bit. I haven't seen any annoyance. What I saw was just people pointing out and say, this is a bit ironic, isn't it? I don't know why you're bothered about Irish heritage when all the migrants... what the country's taking and will find it offensive, and you will end up taking monuments down to appease them, believes the listener. Greg, it takes 12 months for a job to be advertised and given out, and the person start within the council. It's not that straightforward. I know, but you see, that would be like saying, this is not something that comes out of the blue, you know in advance. Fine Gael, hang another one of their party out to dry, read the Heritage Fund. That was ridiculous that this was overlooked, says another listener. We have to protect our heritage throughout the county that our ancestors created for us. Red card for this councillor. Another, the councillor hasn't explained why there were no applications from Donegal. The staff weren't there to process, to open up the application process. So in other words, groups couldn't apply for this tranche of funding because it was deemed that the staff, there wasn't enough staff there. There's only, this is not down to any blame for any individuals. There are individuals working in heritage that work extremely hard. They need people to help them. I don't know how Noel Blaney would be looking for votes around Donegal when he couldn't even turn up to the defective concrete block action group meeting. What has this... He says he was out of the country, didn't he? What has this country come to? People complain about the most stupid things. Sorry, he never said he was out of the country. He said he was canvassing. It was Charlie McConnell that said he was out of the country. Noel Blaney isn't the only candidate in elections driving using a northern van. No, I saw that all right, but it's not... this is not Noel Blaney's van. This is a supporter of his party. A van from Northern Ireland was given to him, and it just looked a bit odd with the Northern Irish plates. The list of archaeological sites in Donegal hasn't been updated for 10 years. Neither Dublin nor Lifford want archaeology to interfere with wind turbines, believes the listener. I'm still not clear as to how and why this grant was not applied for. Was it not advertised in a prominent place? Sorry, I hope it was... I'm going to try and paraphrase this. The council... would facilitate applications for these grants, and they would normally open up the portal on their website, maybe do an interview or have a newspaper article inviting groups to apply for this funding. The staff wasn't available within the council to process the application, so the portal was never opened. So we, as from Donegal, never sent applications nationally for approval. So if that clears it up a little bit. And this from a text message in from Minister Charlie McConnell, no less. And it reads as follows. I look forward to Greg giving equally as enthusiastic coverage to the many announcements coming into our county where Donegal is at, or near the top of the table, as he had today when the county has not received funding. On this occasion, no applications were submitted from Donegal County Council this fund, and if there had been, I'd have worked to ensure that Donegal applications were very well considered as always. Well, I hope I wasn't too over-enthusiastic in my coverage, but I'm only trying to reflect, really, the views of the people out there today. Right. Not Me Told. Back with more after these. Okay, in studio with me, we have Raymond Birch, chair of Letterkenny Athletics Club. Good morning, Raymond.
Morning, Greg.
And we also have Darren Price, club member and coach in the Fit for Life programme. Hiya, Darren.
Morning, Greg.
Right, okay. So, funny enough, Fit for Life, it's the birthday, April 22nd.
Yes,
That's my birthday as well. So me and Fit for Life have nothing in common other than we share a birthday at this point. Okay, so just give us a recap, Raymond, of Fit for Life, which is a programme from Letterkenny Athletics Club.
Well, it's Letterkenny Athletic Club in conjunction with Donegal Sports Partnership. So
Push a wee bit closer to that mic for me, if you don't mind. Good stuff.
We're more or less going a year, so we're... We started it up last year and we've been just amazed by the success of it. On a normal night, we'd have about 40 people on the track of us. On a good night, then we could have 60 people. We have well over 80 people that's signed up for it throughout the year. So it's been a great success.
And it's all inclusive, Darren. So how do you accommodate people, who are starting their Get Fit process, those that are, can have 5K in them, if you know what I mean.
The whole ethos of the Fit for Life was that there'd be no pressure put on any participant who comes down on a Monday evening. So you work off your own ability. So if you're just coming to walk, you walk. If you're coming to jog, you jog. If you want to put in a bit more intensity, that's solely up to the participant themselves. There's no pressure whatsoever on anybody that comes on a Monday evening.
But their aims are supported, and I think that's a critical element to this. It's structured, isn't it? It's not ad hoc, and am I doing anything? Is that a waste of time? What's happening here? They have the assistance of qualified coaches like yourself.
So there's a dedicated group of coaches that are there every Monday night, and the best part about it is that, look, it's a safe environment. So we work off the track, so everybody's together, everybody starts together, everybody finishes together. And in fact, we've noticed that everybody looks out for each other. The camaraderie around the group is second to none, and the friendships that have been developed over the last year, it's great to see. And for ourselves, when we go down on a Monday evening and we help the participants, for us watching the progress over the course of the last year it's simply been phenomenal, basically.
I can imagine. And Raymond, too, that's the test of something like this, is people coming back. Yes. Because you can launch, can't you, and it can be loads of people go, right, this is for me. And obviously people are going to fall away and there's life circumstances, what have you. But you've kept a really strong core of numbers that are participating on a regular occasion.
Yeah, the beauty of Fit for Life is you don't get left behind. As Darren says, you come and you work of your own ability. So you can't get left behind. It's amazing watching the people progress throughout the year. So it's great.
Darren, it's up to each individual to set their own goals and what have you, but they can do around other people as well. And this is an open invitation for people to get involved, with other people, because, as I say, and I've sort of talked about this in the past, people can be a bit nervous about being judged or not feeling accepted. You know what I mean? These are human emotions. Yeah. So that's why they come up quite often, because they are regular feelings.
Yeah. So look, basically we're facilitating a service to the town of Letterkenny, and we're there every Monday evening, 5:45, Dynamic Street Track or a leisure centre, just to get it in there. And again, look, the individual that participating, it's them that commits to going on a Monday evening. It's them that commits to putting in the level of intensity during the Monday evening that they're there. It's them that commits to doing that wee bit extra during the week. And it's them then that commits to doing maybe a 3K or a 5K to see how I'm getting on. So really, we're just facilitating that service for them to come and see how they get on, what they can get out of it, and hopefully the ultimate aim is that they get fit and they stay fit.
And obviously we're not going to talk about individuals, Darren, but what kind of stories have you seen develop over the last year?
Well, that's the best part of it. Like, I can give you two stories. Like, we've had a member there who's been involved with LAC for 20 plus years in the background, and he got involved in the Fit for Life. And in the autumn of this year, he ran his very first 5K.
Oh, wow. So he talked the talk and now he walked or ran
exactly, yeah. And then we have other individuals, like, they never ran a mile before they came to the Fit for Life. and they're now in training to partake in the upcoming Belfast Marathon, which is a huge achievement and a huge undertaking. And it's, I suppose it's a...
It's almost beyond expectations, isn't
it's
it,
beyond
really?
Expectation,
yeah.
But again, that's where we put it on the individual. It's how they feel themselves, what they can do, and if they feel they can do it, we'll support them every step of the way.
And what's more difficult to measure, but we know it's going to have an impact too, it's not just, you know, what the physical goals, it's how people feel about themselves and in their own headspace.
Yeah. Look, there's individuals that come down on a Monday evening for their own reasons. They might have personal reasons, they might be well-being reasons, fitness reasons, or progression reasons. And again, look, that's why the facility is there, and it really does help. So everybody gets out what they put in, basically. If I'm going for my own personal reasons, that's good. If I'm going to improve my fitness, that's good. Again,
doesn't matter. It's just so, Raymond. So someone's listening today, and I think it's good to talk about these things throughout the year, because often we try and avoid it. But you'll always talk at the start of the year, won't you? New year, new me, and all that kind of stuff. But maybe now people are thinking, right? April, it's April now, so May, June, I'll feel a bit better about myself, a bit more energy, maybe down the sides of clothes, whatever it might be. And they're thinking of turning up on my birthday, Monday, April 22nd, at the Aura Leisure Centre at the Danny McDade track at 5:45. So you pull up into your car, right? You're sitting there and you go, balls, what have I done here? You get out of the car. What happens then? How are you greeted? How are you welcomed? How are you sort of initiated into it for your first time?
Yeah, well, we meet on the track, down at the very bottom corner of the track. There's, everybody congregates down there. For anybody that doesn't know, we just do a wee small warm-up, we do a few drills, and everybody's welcome. All new members are always feel welcome. Believe it or not, but every week there's always somebody new there trying it out, and you're more than welcome to come and try. This isn't for the club, this isn't about making money, this is about getting and giving back to the community. So you're welcome to come and try it out for a few weeks before. Like, you don't have to come with money and pay up the first night. So, and we have, as Darren says, we have dedicated coaches there every week, and everybody is made feel welcome and helped along throughout the night. So
it's just to reference the money, and it's always dirty talking about money, but you know, there are costs involved there as well. It's €50 a year for beginners, but you're not standing there, you know, with the mobile cash machine on day one.
No.
That's not the theory about this, but if people contribute, obviously, if they're coming regularly, it's only fair they contribute, but it's €1 a week, really, effectively.
Yeah, it's more or less for insurance.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's stuff you have to cover.
You become a member of Letterkenny Athletic Club with that €50, and there's obviously benefits to that as well. So
yeah, okay. You become a member of the club?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not actually right. Okay, that's interesting. Very good. So there's other things ongoing as well, because you would see people, wouldn't you, Darren, who sort of transition from this as well?
Yeah.
And trying different things within the structure or within their own life.
Again, like, suppose we've seen that already. We have people that come along then and from the group that help out with the local 5Ks, whether it's marshalling or actually taking part and so on. So, and then obviously the benefits too, you have the facilities of the hour that you can use as well. You have unlimited use of the track at any time of the week if it's not already booked out by another club. So look, the benefits of the Fit for Life and obviously club membership.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when this Fit for Life program was originally launched, it attracted a huge range of people, different backgrounds, different exercise levels and all that type of stuff. There was a big turnout. You retained a really high number of those, and it's just throwing the invitation out there again on the 1 year anniversary, Raymond.
Yeah, we're hoping to have next Monday night, Monday the 22nd, we're hoping to have tea and sandwiches and for all that's interested, a birthday cake. So everybody.
Well, you shouldn't have really. I mean, this is
well, you're more than welcome to come down, Greg. Anything
but,
you want.
Obviously, that's why you've got the cake.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. It's a okay. So it's going to be a wee bit of a party vibe, party vibe. You know, a celebration vibe. Bit of cake, some sandwiches, tea. But that's also an opportunity to throw up the invitation again to call down, have a look around, feel comfortable. It's obviously very, very welcoming. I can see that, and you're very enthusiastic about that side, Raymond. That this is for everyone.
Yeah. Well, next week's definitely a great night to call down because hopefully people come down and enjoy the night and enjoy the atmosphere, and hopefully by next week we'll have a bit better weather. So
that's right. Yeah.
I think last year after we were on here, the weather picked up, so we're hoping for the same this year.
Well, you know, that's the power.
Believe it or not, in the last year, you know, we have it every Monday night. We've had very little poor weather on a Monday evening.
It's funny
you
how
could probably
goes,
get it
in
your count it in your one hand.
Yeah.
But even if the weather was that bad, the numbers were still up at between 40 and 50 people coming on.
Which shows
on
how
evening.
Determined people are to keep it going, so, aren't they?
And the commitment of it as well.
Because that would have been done through gritted teeth for a lot of people, but there's stuff that we're going to do this. Yeah. All right, brilliant. So if you want to register an interest as well, there's no point me reading out this URL because it would make sense if we were online here, right? But I presume it's just go to Letterkenny AC socials, website?
The easiest thing to do if you're interested in wishing to partake is come down on a Monday evening.
Yeah.
Without fail, we'll always be there at 5:45 on a Monday evening. Okay. We'll always be there.
Right, and if you want to sort of look at that online element of it, as soon as this interview is finished, I know what's going to happen. Shannon's going to come in, take a picture, and then we're going to put the link under on our own social medias. So you'd love a huge turnout for the birthday celebrations at the Danny McDade track at the Aura Leisure Centre in Letterkenny this coming Monday, April 22nd at 5:45. And it's very clear, chatting to Raymond and Darren, they want everyone who's got any interest in this at all to come along and see, at the very least, if it's for you.
Yep.
And you've proof, Darren, that some people heard the call last year and it has changed their lives in
changed
a very positive
lives.
Way, which is very rewarding, Raymond, isn't it?
It's
good to see the club having that impact on people.
It's great for us to see the progress in people and see what they've got from it. Like, I know myself what I've got from athletics, and to see this here from other people throughout the club is lovely. Like.
And there's another interesting group, people who formerly were active or club members in the past, obviously life sometimes can get in the way, and they've come back and sort of started getting back into it again.
It's great.
All right, brilliant stuff. All right, brilliant. Raymond Birch, Chair of Letterkenny Athletics Club, Darren Price, club member and coach in the Fit for Life programme. Just to remind you, Danny McDade track at the Oral Leisure Centre in Letterkenny this coming Monday, April 22nd at 5:45. And if you're interested, then every Monday, every week thereafter. Okay, we'll be back with... Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Greg.
We'll be back with more after these. Now, we're joined on the programme by Tracy O'Carroll, who's Deputy Director of the National Care Experience Programme. Good morning, Tracy. Thank you for your time today.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, we are speaking in the context of the National End of Life Survey, which is quite positive in that it finds that the majority of people feel their loved ones receive very good end-of-life care here in Ireland. But like everything, really, there are areas of improvement. But the positives first from this this report, this survey, Tracy.
Yeah, so just to say that like over 4,500 relatives and friends told us about their experiences of their loved ones who had passed away between September and December of 2022. And as you said, most of those, 89%, said that they had a good or very good experience. So what they said that, you know, staff provided, you know, respect and dignity throughout that journey. They had huge confidence and trust in the healthcare staff. And the staff provided clear explanations, you know, to their relatives or friends using language and explanations, you know, that could be understood, which is really important, obviously.
When we talk about settings, it might seem obvious, but what settings are included in such a survey?
Well, actually, it's really interesting because we found out that, you know, at this point in our journey of life, we're going across several settings. We're not staying in one place. So it looked at home, nursing homes, hospitals and hospices. But if you took any one of those, we can see, for instance, 2,500 people were cared for in their home in the last 3 months of life. But in the last 2 days of life, you know, 6% of those had moved to a nursing home. nearly half, 42%, 1,000 of those kind of passed away in a hospital, and 13% of those moved on to a hospice. So we're moving across all settings, and so it's really important, you know, that that compassion is shown and in all settings. And I suppose that led to where the improvements, where areas that the relatives and friends would like to see improved were identified, because they'd like to see better continuity, availability and responsiveness between the services, the settings and the professionals involved in the end of life care.
Not surprisingly, hospice care, 94% of people rating the overall care that their relative or friend received in hospice at the end of their life is very good. As I say, that doesn't come as any surprise to me, and perhaps didn't to you.
What we found was that people really appreciated the fact that they could, you know, visit at any time and stay overnight if that a possibility was available, bringing their, you know, photos and personal mementos. And that all led to a much more positive experience. And of course, having your own room, and in hospices, there's a lot of, you know, family rooms where you can make your coffee and your tea and all those things that are really important in those kind of last few days of life, and to have your loved one, it allows your loved ones to be around you at all the time.
And maybe I'm reading it wrong, but it would seem the areas that need improvement, you know, it's within our gift. It seems to be about, you know, maybe resources, but how timely care is, communication between various care providers. Is that a fair synopsis?
Absolutely, yeah. So we'd like to see better coordination between services and staff involved in care. And, you know, if it depends, again, where the care is provided. For example, in the home, it was sometimes hard to get access to the GPs out of our services. So in our homes, the GPs and the public health nurses are by far, you know, the greatest source of support, you know, when we need it at that time, but it's hard to get them out of hours. So we need to look at that, as you say, and better coordination and communication between the services about what's happening, because as we've noted, we're moving between all the services, and better communication within the services as well.
It's a huge sample size, really, 4,500. And I suppose, too, speaking relatively soon after a bereavement, fair play to those who took the time, I suppose, with the for those that will follow them and having to go through this to try and improve their experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So this the National End of Life Survey is run by the National Care Experience Programme, and that is a partnership between the Health Service Executive, the Health Information and Quality Authority, and the Department of Health. And why that's really important is that each of us now are going to take these findings, and you can see on our website, yourexperience.ie, what the HSE has said that they're going to do as a result of, you know, these findings. And you'll also see actually responses from Nursing Home Ireland and Kayla Care that they'll support their members, in, you know, their nursing home members to take on the findings and to make the changes that the relatives and friends have asked for. We've worked, we've had huge support from the Irish Hospice Foundation with this survey, and they are very much taking the findings on board and plan to put in place, you know, those changes needed within their remit over the next kind of months and years. HICRA will take the findings and use them for standards and monitoring, and the Department of Health will use them for legislation and policy. So everybody will be taking these findings and using them for improvements. So we're very, very grateful to those people who took the time to respond to, you know, what is a very difficult survey. There was 110 questions. We looked at pain management, respect and dignity, emotional support, communication and provision of information. So they're hugely insightful, the findings. It's the first time as a nation we have, you know, this information, and now we can act on it to improve the services, you know, that we're all going to need eventually.
All right, indeed. Tracy O'Carroll, thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Tracy's Deputy Director of the National Care Experience Programme. Coming to your comments here now. Greg, will you ask all candidates who'll be running for council election the following questions? One, who will they co-opt their seat should they not see out their term? And two, are they in favour of a second term maximum service? That comes in from Sarah. I would say, Sarah, at this point, would we have seen the last of those being co-opted onto the council? I suppose the logic is that they're stepping away and it gives someone else an opportunity to show what they can do. Maybe some would see that as an unfair advantage, but those are the rules as are set out. A two-term maximum service, which would be, what, 10 years? I don't know. Is there an appetite for that, perhaps? Hi, Greg. Typical council, good for nothing, and Barry talking some bull. They could not run a hen house. Well, in fairness, he outlined it as it is. I wouldn't call it bull. You might not like what's being said, but it is the truth. And, you know, it's good that people come on and speak and answer questions. I wouldn't criticise anyone for answering questions, even if maybe sometimes we don't like the answers. At least that's a democracy where you can put questions to people in power. I get the feeling that someone decided not to go for this funding to use it as an excuse to get a new resource. Not good enough. I don't know. I don't see the logic in that, but that's your view and I respect it. Thank you very much for your time. Hi, Greg. Just on the insurance disc issue, actually, we'll come to that separately because there was a question put up on social media, and I'll get all that in at the same time. It's about insurance. Greg, you're doing a great job highlighting the important events that's happening in our country. You don't have to justify your job, but Charlie McConlogue, on the other hand, it is not his job to be looking out for grants for the upkeep of our country and bring it to the attention of the relevant people. Good morning, Greg. The meaning of perjury is the offence of willfully telling another, making a misrepresentation under oath. We are neither telling untruths or under oath, so we can't. Why can't we talk about it? Telling the truth is not perjury. If he was an Irish man, his name and address where his family lived would be all over the internet. We have two tiers. It's quite literally not the case. And I could give a million examples, but I couldn't. When someone, it's not about perjury, it's about whether you take a Google description of perjury or not. It is quite simply the law that someone, the speculation about a named individual ends once they are charged. That is just the way it is. It doesn't matter where you're from, what your background is or what have you. That is simply the law. Can't be named. The exact same way, for an example, is that someone who's accused of crime, and to protect the victim, they're not meant. You can't name them by law. You can't go, oh, well, that's not fair, I'm going to name them. It simply is not allowed. Morning, Greg. Would you give a shout out to John McGinley on his new fleet of coaches? I saw it all over social media. Some investment from McGinley's. Wishing him and his drivers continued success, thanking him for the service he provides, especially for our students up here in Inishowen. Of course, not forgetting Busfida as well. Two brilliant companies indeed. Okay, let us go to Lisa now, who's calling for a speed limit adjustment close to where she lives. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, what road are we talking about here now, Lisa? It's a popular road. People will know it once we start talking about it.
Yes, it's the N56 leaving Dunloe en route to Glenties.
And it is a lovely new road now, isn't it? I mean, it's beautiful, beautiful scenery. But you believe the speed limit's too high?
It's 100 kilometres per hour, yeah. And as residents, we would like that reduced to 60.
Off the back of what? Have there been instances up until now, Lisa?
The serious overtaking, high speed, children afraid to go out, passing from neighbours to neighbours. They can't go out on their bicycles. As residents, we edge out of our driveways and we have very fast vehicles tight up behind us, overtaking and tooting. Mm. Anxious walkers and cyclists pulling into the hard shoulder as the Need for Speed drivers approach. It's just very nerve-wracking when you, as a resident, and you actually see this sitting in our dwellings and cars racing up and down the road at high speed.
And also an upsetting story of a person out walking their dog too.
Yeah, it was a child actually.
Oh no!
And the dog died. It was a hit, and he was a minor. The boy was very annoyed and vexed, as the family was. But you know, as residents, we don't want a death on our road here. Mm-hmm. There has been 63 fatalities on Irish roads this year, 12 being pedestrians and 2 cyclists. There's critical attention has to be taken for road safety now on the stretch of road.
Now, much there of is that going road, to be a fatality. Lisa, much of that road, as part of its redevelopment, includes a path for cyclists, if they choose to use it, and walkers. That's not secure enough in and of itself. Is that the feeling locally, Lisa?
Yes, it is. As residents, we would love a barrier between the road and the cycle lane for both parties, for the cyclists and the pedestrians, and also for the drivers. You know, it just makes everybody feel comfortable if that would be in place.
And is the consensus from who you're speaking to that they would want it 60 kilometres per hour all the way from Dunloe to Glenties?
We would like it as far as the big bridge.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of pedestrians coming from Dunloe.
So the big
just
bridge,
to use that walkway.
So from the big bridge into Dunloe, that section of the new road, that would be 60?
Yes.
Okay. Because there are some...
We have three... Yeah. Sorry?
I was going to say, there are some quite windy bends there. I would have thought it's an 80-kilometre road, you know, at the most, but parts of it, obviously, 100.
Well, actually, it's a straight road. Mm. It's very fast. They've done a lot of work on it. And we're all very grateful for the new road. But it's just, as residents, it's too fast.
Yeah, and I think I'm thinking of the section maybe... I'm thinking of the section more immediately after the big bridge, but I take your point that it's just become a bit of a hot road, a sort of like a rat race up and down that road by some drivers.
Yes, it okay. has, yeah. You know, we don't even have signs out to say that, you know, that the children are at play or there's a Go Mal sign or there's nothing like that. Or, you know, we need things, all these things have to be taken to our attention for road users.
Okay. Lisa, listen, thank you very much indeed. Of course, with every upgrade, sometimes it can increase speeds and what have you, and local residents like yourself, and you're not the first that I've spoken to, concerned that something is going to happen. Stuff's happening already, but you know what I mean. Lisa, thanks for your time today.
I just wanted to say that Micheál McCollum, Micheál McGillaspig has been helping us along the way here, and I just want to thank him for his time and attention. But he himself is getting nowhere with this. So he's asked me to come on here this morning to see if it could further our case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's done now. Thank you very much indeed. A caller says roads that two cars can't pass on have 80 kilometre speed limits in Donegal. It's absolutely ridiculous. And listen, there is going to be a review of speed limits in this county. And I think we all know roads that definitely need to have a reduction. I hope they don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and put the proper resources into, you know, properly reviewing the speed limits across our county. A couple of requests before we take a break. Congratulations and best wishes to Charlie and Denise Wilson in Craigadoes, St. Johnstone, celebrating their 30th wedding anniversary today. Also, happy 60th birthday to Charlie from all the family. A double celebration. Hi, Greg. Please, can you wish Rose Meehan from Creve Smith, Letterkenny, a very happy birthday. Lots of love from Maggie, Willie and Daisy. It's my pleasure. And please play a request for Mary and Eddie McKeever, Castle Shanahan, Letterkenny. They're celebrating 50 years married today. And for Denise and Charlie Wilson, celebrating 30 years married today. Best wishes from Danny and Katrina. Now, I'm not sure if it's just a wee rush of anniversaries, which is great, and it's lovely to see people together for so long, or did something happen this time 20, 30 and 50 years ago that made it a popular day to get married? I don't know. Okay, requests, by the way, more than welcome on to this programme. And, you know, anything you want to talk about on this show, like, of course, we have to cover some of the more serious issues affecting us as a region. And we do that too. But we're more than open as well to talk about other stuff, like we did, talking about getting fit or anything else you want to talk about. It doesn't always have to be incredibly serious, don't you know? We're here for you for all matters on 08660 25000. Ali Farron, did you hear the thunder and lightning last night? It was just west of you.
Didn't hear any thunder and lightning, now, to be fair.
You must have had an early night. Couldn't have missed it.
I did. I need me beauty sleep.
You certainly do. No, I'm only messing. Come here, Ali. I must say, actually, of course, Ali Farron is a candidate in the local elections. He's running for the 100% Redress Party, and he's also manager of the Malinhead Community Centre, and potentially, I suppose, two hats on here. The Wild Atlantic Way has celebrated its 10-year birthday, effectively. And, you know, it has been a big boost. Now, obviously, you know, south of south of Galway, certainly doing very well. But we have also benefited here, perhaps not as much as we can. But the feeling is that one of the jewels in our crown, and sorry to use that phrase again, but it is the best way to describe it, Malin Head, is just not maximising its potential because the facilities just simply aren't there, Ali.
Correct. 10 years ago, when the Wild Atlantic Way was launched, it was, you know, it was seen to be, it was a great idea at the time, and like there's nothing short of it. It's brilliant. It drives traffic right around the coast of Ireland. It's been a massive benefit to lots of different communities around here. But the first or last signature point on the Wild Atlantic Way is the Malin Head, the iconic location. And we're 10 years in. We got a toilet block. We've got plans. We've cost a fortune. We've got reports. We've got this and that. But we've still, and you've been there, was it last year or 2 years ago? Traffic's still coming. But we're still no further forward.
And is the issue here as well, too? I mean, there's a lovely coffee shop up there, one of the nicest cups of coffee I ever had, in fact. You know, you can buy a few bits and bobs. But really, I just think that if tourists land up there, they take in the views and then they turn and go again, if you know what I mean. Is that the concern that we're not maybe monetizing it enough? Or maybe you don't want to overdevelop either, but what's the consensus as what needs to be done that Malin Head and the surrounding area can benefit more from this traffic?
The happy medium would be to have something that would retain people a bit longer. Like Fáilte Ireland's own figures, I think it's 23 or 26 minutes at Malin Head. Like last week, on the 10th anniversary, I was there with a film crew who are going to be highlighting the Wild Atlantic Way going forward on Channel 5. I think it was a TV program on Channel 5. But, you know, while I was there within that hour, there was two coachloads. Mm. There had previously been two coachloads, you know, an hour previously. You know, we're not able to get people employed on that area. You know, like Fáilte Ireland's figures or Ireland's figures is that 10% of the people of the workforce are employed in tourism. You know, it's obviously a lot of that tourism is in Cork and Kerry and Clare. We're not like the big argument here is about our children going to Australia, and good luck to them. But you know, if there was something here that could retain them, that they could support the families, support the community, and support our schools and GA clubs and things, you know. We have to look at that.
And when do the coaches start arriving en masse? Like, will there be many coaches up there today?
Well, I was up this morning with a coachload of authors on the Wild World Book Tour or something like that there at 8 o'clock. So it was a bit early for that. But traditionally, the coach transport business takes off around St. Patrick's Day or at Easter and will run to October. You know, but like, Malin Head still the going by Fáilte Ireland's figures, we're the second most visited place in the county.
So what could be done, Ali, in the last couple of minutes we have? Because, I mean, people will go up, tick it off. I was at the most northerly part of Ireland and head off. And you know, they probably go away satisfied. But what can be done, do you think, to sort of take some of their money off them? And I hate to be crude about it, right? But this is about the local economy, the local community and families, as you say. Like, is there anything, like, what tastefully could be done, really, is the question.
It's a derelict site at the moment.
Yeah,
you know, like you were on earlier on about grants for conservation and one thing and another. Surely Malin Head could fall in under that. Mm-hmm. That at least if there was a door on a place that was painted red or blue or green, it would be a photo op. At the moment, they're derelict sites. Mm-hmm. They don't. You know, you go anywhere else in the world at such an iconic location like Malin Head, there would be somebody there all year round, maintaining, looking after the pathway, unfortunately, that is one of the greatest assets. It gets people out of their cars, gets people walking. Like, that's in terrible shape at the moment. So so much more could be done.
And so much is being done, like we're seeing, and I mean, obviously, Errigal doesn't have the toilets, but we are seeing, you know, great efforts to improve pathways up there. There's been some great work done up at Schlieve League recently. I know I'm picking two obvious ones, but that keep you there a little longer. They built a new platform that you can stand and it holds your attention and you take your pictures and stuff. It doesn't have to be, you know, a 10 billion euro museum. It's little bits that just sort of engage you a bit more with the history and the heritage, because that's what we want. You know, we don't want necessarily a McDonald's up there. You know, you want something at all, but you want something there that sort of gives you more of a sense of where you're at.
We definitely want something. At the moment, we have nothing apart from a toilet block. So it's important that we and it has to be done tastefully. It has to be done correct. You know, like you walk to the Hell's Hole from Malin Head, which is lovely walk, but all you get is a broken down timber fence. Like, what does that tell you? Mm. You know, there's nothing there to tell the story, nothing there to advise people about going about where Star Wars was filmed. So much that people could learn so much more about.
I think it's a bit of a no-brainer, Ali, in fairness. But thanks very much for highlighting it, because it's a regular conversation, and hopefully we move to a point where something tastefully is done. And as I say, it maximises maybe the potential revenue from the huge numbers that go up there. Ali Farron, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. That's Ali Farron there, who is manager of the Malin Head Community Centre, but also a election candidate for the 100% Redress Party. It's going to be really interesting, the debates, you know, coming up to the elections. We're going to be kicking in earnest, I suppose, next month. Once we get the final list of runners and riders, I suppose, after the end of this month.